I cuffed him. I preached for some fella. He's not a contemporary guy. He's just real anti-convention. And every time I go, he says, preach without a tie and preach in blue jeans. He says, I want you to be comfortable. And I'm standing there with a suit and tie. And I said, I am comfortable. I am not comfortable like this. I am comfortable in a suit and tie. All right? I came in tonight. I said, if Chris Huff pulls a screen down tonight, I'm out of here. So, sing a bunch of 7-Eleven songs, you know, seven words, 11 times. So, I care enough about your pastor. Yesterday he said we're a flag tie, but I mean, look, I've got one on the shirt. He still got me scared. But anyway, yeah, come on. Well, tomorrow I'll be wearing my work clothes. I want you to open your Bible to Joshua chapter 3. And all I'm going to do tonight is leave you with a question. My whole goal tonight is to leave you with a question. Not one of those rhetorical questions like, you know, if a tree falls in the wilderness and there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a noise? Let me ask you this. If anybody ever asked you that, say, if a tree falls in the wilderness and there's nobody there to hear it, how do you know it fell? How do you know it didn't grow on its side? Well, they can't. Well, I say one can't fall without making noise. So, you know, everybody's got something they rule by. But, no, not a rhetorical question or a philosophical question. I'm going to leave you the question. Tremendously important question, I believe. But I've got to work to it. I've got to get to it. You know, this is Memorial Day. You know what a memorial is? It's what's left behind when you leave. You go by a cemetery and they have those little stones. You know, that's really a memorial. That lets you know that guy was there. It tells you when he was born, when he died, and tells you his name, etc. Now, some of them don't tell you a whole lot more. Some of them do tell you a little more. But I want you to keep that in mind as we look at this. Now, there's several things. Like I said, I've got to get to you, get across to you before I get to the question. But I want to leave you with a question. And I hope the question haunts you. I hope the question is going to rattle around in your mind from now until the day you die or until you hear a real loud trumpet. Okay? And so look at Joshua chapter 3. Joshua chapter 3, children of Israel about to cross the Jordan, says this in verse 4, yet there shall be a space between you and it, talking about the Ark of the Covenant, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Come not near unto it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way heretofore. Let's bow our heads, let's talk to the Lord. Father, it's good to be saved. It is good to be saved. You know what, God? I want to thank you for letting me be in a church where being dressed like this is not normal. I thank you, God, for being in a church where a pastor wants his people to dress up for their God. Not a fashion show, God, not a competition. Lord God, we've all dressed up for some human. And if we can do our best for a human, Father, we should certainly do our best for you every week. So God, I thank you that I could be here. God, I pray that you'll deliver this message to these folks. These are your people. They came, they want something out of your book. God, we have no problem with your book tonight, and we have no problem with you. The problem is us. And so God, I pray that their flesh and my flesh will not be such a problem that you can't convey your message. I pray, God, that you will get Sam Gipp out of your way and out of their way. I pray, God, that you will edify your church tonight, that ultimately this church will glorify thee, because that's why we're here. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. The end of the verse says this, said, you have not passed this way heretofore. The first thing I want to get across to you is that you have not passed this way before. I say that for this reason. What I'm trying to get across is this. You are not an eternal soul. You say, well, I'm going to live forever. No, no. You're an immortal soul. You're not an eternal soul. Eternal means you have always existed, just like God has always existed. And I got news for you, bucko. There was a time when you did not exist. You came into existence, and now you are a soul. And if you've been saved, you are an immortal soul, but you are not an eternal soul. You know, people, we are so saturated with our society and with our culture, and you say, well, I'm a King James Bible believer. Man, we're a hellfire damnation church. We're separated. Yeah, but you watch enough TV, and it starts messing with your brain. You watch this junk, you know, with time travel and other dimensions and somebody, you know, being regurgitated or reincarnated or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you get this idea that you're just kind of a soul that's been bouncing through eternity, and if you didn't do so good this time, you'll do all right maybe the next time, and maybe the next time. People, listen, you are not eternal soul. You have not passed this way before. You've never walked this earth before. You understand?
Well, I think I was a Roman soldier.
I think you should be locked up. You were not a Roman soldier. You were not a caveman. Maybe Al Gore was a caveman. They said not long ago that Neanderthal could talk. I said, well, that's no big news. I mean, Al Gore talks. That ain't Neanderthal, nothing is. But and I don't believe in that junk. But people, what I'm saying is that you are not an eternal soul. You have not always existed. You have not been bounced around this earth throughout time from one body to another, you know, working your way up some divine chain of command until you can finally hit Nirvana or Hoboken or Godhood or whatever it is. You have not passed this way before. You have never been here before. You understand? Well, I didn't say you haven't been to church. I said, you have not walked this earth another body. You did not live another life before. You were not another person. There has not never been anything like that. You have been here one time. This is your big shot. You understand? You are not an eternal soul. You are not eternal spirit. God gave you your spirit. You are not an eternal spirit. You know, you got this idea, and that's where a lot of that hypnotism, you know, and they hypnotize this guy. I said, well, they hypnotize this guy, and he told me, that he lived in Rome, in ancient Rome. Well, how would you know? Well, he described the house. Were you there? How would you know if he described it right? Yeah, I just said, what do you think it is? I think it's a spirit. Yeah, I think it's a spirit. And I think it might be a spirit that was in the room the guy's describing, but it ain't him. You are not an eternal spirit. You are not an eternal spirit that's just kind of flitting around and taking possession of a body for a little while and doing your thing here and doing your thing there. You are not an eternal spirit. Well, you know, I had an out-of-body experience. I think you're still out. And you watch those TV things, you read the science fiction garbage, and you start talking about dimension. I mean, man, when I talk to Christians, they go, you know, time travel. There is no time travel. I probably rock some of you. There is no time travel. There's not another dimension. Well, I take it back. I've seen some of you. Anyway, there's not another dimension. You're not going to go through a wormhole in space and shake hands with you as a child. You understand? You're not an eternal spirit. You're not an eternal soul. You have never passed this way before. This is your shot here. God is immortal. God has always existed. God has never been created. You are finite. You were made. Go back before your birthday. You didn't exist. Okay, go back a year before your birthday, and you didn't exist. Your soul wasn't in existence. You were not like the Mormons believe. You're a spirit up there that's just waiting for a body so that you can come down here. That's what they believe. Mormons believe, hey, listen, man, that's why they have all their kids. They have all their kids because all those spirits need bodies, and so they're making bodies so the spirit can come down. That's what they teach. You're not that. By the way, neither are they. Okay? What I'm telling you is you have not passed this way before. I don't care how many times you have walked into a room and said, well, I feel like I've been here before. Well, I've done that too. Say, what do you reckon it is? Don't know what it is. Don't claim to know what it is. But I duck. You know. You are not an eternal soul. You are not an eternal spirit. You have not passed this way before. This is your best shot. I want you to go to James chapter 5. James chapter 5. Says this, verse 14, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Second thing I want to get across tonight is that your life is a vapor. Oh, guys, man, you know, some of you don't even know what that is. You young people, and this is not getting down on you, but man, even as I talk, you're getting old. I mean, your life is a vapor. You ever see what happens when a car starts up? Car starts up, and what happens is there's condensation in an exhaust pipe. That exhaust pipe is cold, and when that thing fires up and that hot exhaust starts going through that exhaust pipe, that water condenses, and pretty soon you'll see some water dripping out of the exhaust pipe. And on a cold morning, you'll see that vapor come out. And how long does that vapor last? That's your life. You know what some of you don't realize? First off, let me say this. If you're 18 years old or under, I got good news for you. This is really good news. You will always be 18. If you're under 18, don't worry. When you get there, you're always going to be 18. What do you mean? I'm not going to be 18. I'm going to turn 19, 20. No. Inside here, you're always going to be 18. You ask some of these adults, you know what they'll say? Well, I've always felt like I'm 18. It's just I'm inside this, ancient body. Now, some of them I've met, I don't think they ever got past 8 years old, but most people, I am telling you, you talk to most people and they will all say the same thing. They will say, I feel like I did, you know, as far as inside, I feel like I did when I was a kid. I feel like I did when I was 18 years old, but my body got old on me. So if you want good news, the good news is you're always going to be 18. The bad news is your body isn't going to wait for you. And you are going to get old before you know it. Man, you know how you know you're old? This happened. I pulled up behind a 64 Mustang convertible, and I looked at the license plate, and it said, antique car. Oh, man, I felt a wrinkle form on my face when I saw it. This just happened a couple weeks ago. You know how you know you're old? You know you're old when you sit in a room with somebody you graduated from high school with, and neither one of you recognizes the other one. I went to visit this preacher friend. I went to visit his dad. His dad is lost. And I'm sitting there talking to his dad, and he has his second wife. And there's some woman there about my age, you know. She's sitting in that room. And she didn't quite hear my name when I came in. And I'm talking to this guy. And her and her mom stepped out of the room. And she came back in. And she goes, you're Sam Gibb? I said, yeah. She said, I'm Yvonne St. Dennis. We graduated in 1968 together. She didn't recognize me. I didn't recognize her. You say, what happened? I'm still 18. I'm still the same age I was in 1968. My body isn't. You know what you find out? You find out that most old folks, when they woke up old, it surprised them. It really did. It surprised them. It was a surprising thing. We don't have a house. We don't have a lot. We don't have anything. We owned a house one time. I was on the staff of a church back in Ohio. We owned this house back in 80, 81. That time, our youngest boy, we first bought it. He was a couple years old. John was a couple, 2-3 years old. And we'd go bike riding around his house. I'd get him on a bike. We had a seat in the back of Kathy's bike. She'd ride the kid around, you know, and we'd go ride and have a good time. And not long ago, I was having a meeting at a church that was in that area. And there's a park right across the street from the old house we used to own. We sold it years ago. And we're walking. They got a walking path, you know, asphalted walking path. I like asphalted walking paths. In fact, I think they ought to have walking paths you can take golf carts on. That's my idea of a walk. Walk to the cart, walk back. And we looked over at that house. Moved out of that house 23 years ago. That's a wild thing. And we saw some folks walk in it, and I told Kathy, I said, you know those folks right there, I'll bet you when they got old it surprised them. I mean, Kathy and I last August celebrated 31 years married. And I said, you know the problem with that? Is I remember when my parents celebrated their 25th anniversary. But they were old. You know what a sure sign of old age is? You find yourself praying for more body parts. No, you're not trying to evolve anything new. You just want what you got to work. You know, you start having pain where you didn't even know you had parts. And you forget things, and I don't know how many times, you know, you put something away so that you'll get it when you find it, or you can find it when you need it, and you may as well just go buy a new one. It's easier to buy a new one. And you hit about 35. Look, if you're 35 years old or older, if you're right around that age, quit eating so much. So I'm eating what I always ate. That's what I mean. Cut it in half. Around 435, you could probably concentrate and lose 5 pounds in a week. That's just how easy it is. You can gain weight, lose weight, 5 pounds in a week, no problem at all. After you're about 35 years old, you will pick up the food and gain weight. You will gain weight looking at a picture of food. Now, here's the problem. You can't do anything about that. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. You're going to get old. Your life is a vapor, bucko. I mean, it is passing as we are here right now. You have breathed breaths. You're never going to get back. Your heart has beat beats. It's never going to beat again. You are going to leave this building closer to a hole in the ground than you were when you were here, when you walked in. You understand? You are getting older. None of us expected to be here this long. Well, bless God, I'm going to get out of here. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're going to get out of here feet first. I'm telling you tonight that your life is a vapor. You know, if there's anything I realize, I tell people this way, we've only got so many productive days in our life. I mean, days you can produce. I know your pastor, he's
He's got a head, and I appreciate some of the brain. And he understands what it is to produce. You know what's wrong with you? You think every day that I want to produce something, I can produce it. No, you can't. No, there'll be something. You know, I worked on a book till 2 o'clock last night, almost 2 o'clock last night. And you say, why do you do that? Because there's days when I can't produce. You know, there was a day when I wanted to jump out of an airplane, pull a ripcord. I wasn't being suicidal. I wanted to skydive, you know, and pull this ripcord, enjoy coming down on that parachute. There was a day when I wanted to rappel down the face of a cliff. Now, if I was going to do that, it's not the fear. You know what happened to me? If I was up in the airplane, you know what I'd be thinking? I could be writing. Every second I am here, I could be doing something productive. I came into church one time. I know the pastor meant well. He meant well. He said, I got a guy in my church as a pilot. He's going to take you for an airplane ride for an hour. First thing I thought was 60 minutes not producing. Now, I don't mean nothing to you. It means a big thing to me. I said, where's this airplane? You ready for this? He said this was straight-faced. At an airport 2 hours north of here. I said, you want me to ride in a car for 2 hours so I can ride in an airplane for 1 hour so the guy can say, that's a house, that's a tree, there's a road, and then ride back here for 2 hours. I'm telling you, my skin began to crawl. 5 hours of doing absolutely nothing. You say, you afraid of an airplane? I'm not afraid of an airplane. I am scared to death of wasting 5 hours of my life that I'm never going to have back again. You understand? You know what some of you is wrong? What's wrong with some of you? You think you got enough time to improve your golf swing. I'm telling you the truth. You think that there is time. You think some of your time is worth spending on that. What I'm telling you is your time is fleeting, bucko. I mean, it is a vapor. Grab a vapor sometime. Try to hold on to it and you can't do it. And your life is a vapor and it is passing at this very moment. And you are losing time. And you waste your time with some of the stuff you do. I don't have games on my computer. No, I have no conviction about it. Well, they're all out of hell. Only if I lose. Well, when I say I don't have any games on my computer, I probably do have games on my computer. Because I think when you get them, I think they have games. I don't know. I got a cell phone that has games. You know that? I didn't know that. My kid picks up and goes, oh, look at this. I said, really? Yeah. I don't care. You say, you got a conviction against games? No, I got a conviction against learning them. How many times you got to die in this game before you finally don't die? How much time you got to spend trying to be good so that you can do what? Win a stupid computer game? And all that time you spend, you could be doing something. Listen, every second you're doing that, you know what you're doing? You are wasting another second of your life that you'll never get back. And when you get on the other side, you're going to realize you're the stupidest people on two legs wasting your time like that. Look, if you're a golfer, man, I hope you do well. I hope you're a natural so you don't have to practice. Here's my problem with golf. I have only one problem with golf. And I'm not one of these, you're chasing the ball around a cow pasture. I have no problem with it. You know what the problem is? You talk to a guy who says, well, you know, my life had so much pressure, my job was so tough that I started golfing to take my mind away from it. That's a good deal. Then you try to be good at golf. Now, that's so much pressure, you need something to get you away from golf. I read about mountain climbers. I read about people that do those kind of things. And all I think of is time, time. I read about guys that climb the face of a cliff. They're cliff crawlers, you know. Not mountain climbers. These guys are wall crawlers. And they will climb for over 30 days. Hanging on ropes, sleeping. Carrying their food with them. And all I think about is, you say, oh, are you afraid of falling? I'm not afraid of falling. I'm afraid of hanging there for 30 days. I'm afraid of getting to the top and realizing I just burned 30 days of my life. I just died for 30 days worth and didn't do one thing productive. That's what scares me. You understand? You say, why do you feel that way? Because you only have so much time. Your life is a vapor. No one in this room is more aware of their mortality than me. Nobody in this room knows that by this time next week, you may not be able to produce anything. You hear? Look, if God didn't want it, you and I couldn't pick up a fork tomorrow morning and feed ourselves. And if that happens to you, or that happens to me, you know what you better hope? You better hope this past week you didn't waste your life. You better hope that this past week you can look back. You know what? If you end up unable to move tomorrow, if I end up unable to move tomorrow, you know what you're going to do? You're going to examine all of your life up to that last moment that you raised a hand of your own accord. You know what you're going to do? You're going to examine yourself. You're going to be the toughest judge you've ever had. And you know what some of you are going to say? I was so stupid.
I was so stupid. I wasted my breath. I wasted my life. I wasted my energy. You don't have another shot. I want you to look at Hebrews chapter 9. This may be news to some of you. Verse 27. And as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment. Then it's appointed that you die. Now you say, I knew that. No, no, no. No, you don't believe you're going to die. You believe you're going up in the rapture. Right? Would somebody show me a verse where it says you're appointed to go up in the rapture? Folks, the only appointment we have is with death. You were told you were appointed to die. You were not told you were appointed to go up in the rapture. You know what that means? You're dying. It doesn't mean you're going up in the rapture. Well, I still think. You don't think anything. I got saved. I told you I got saved in 1970, and I thought the Lord was coming back before I got out of Bible college. He didn't. I heard He was coming in 76. He didn't come. I heard He was coming in 79. He didn't come. I heard He was coming in 1980. He didn't come. You know, I read this thing written by a preacher in the colonies in 1774, and he dated the rapture for 1778. In fact, I think he wrote a little booklet called 78 Reasons Why the Lord's Coming. Anyway. Man, the Lord's return has been dated probably every 6 months for the last 25 years. I heard He was coming in 80. I heard He's coming in 86. There were 88 good reasons why He's coming in 88. Obviously, the Lord didn't buy the book. Seems like somebody, I'm trying to remember who it was, somebody thought it was 89. Boy, I can't remember who that was. If our calendar's right, I was in a, pulled into a Kmart. There was a Chevy Suburban with more bumper stickers than any Ruckmanite ever put on one. Oh no, this guy had boards, and on top of it, it said, the Lord is coming in May 14th of 19, I think this was like January of 1992, the Lord's coming May 14th of 1992. And that day came and went. I realized right then, God doesn't frequent Kmart. Picked up a USA Today in January of 1994, and there was a quarter page ad. What do you reckon a quarter page ad in USA Today cost? May 14th, 1994, the Lord's coming. Had it all down. I don't know who put it in there. Man, you know what I found out on May 15th? Lord, don't read USA Today. I had a guy send me something. He got off his computer and he calculated where the moon was on the day of the crucifixion according to his computer. Yeah, that makes all sense. Right. Wasn't this church, was it? Buddy, if you're here, this isn't you. Man, it just struck me. Well, I hope it wasn't him. I hope it wasn't here. Anyway. I may die sooner. My vapor may go out of here quicker than I thought. But, and he had it, you know, and he told me one day the Lord was coming because the moon was going to be in the same position that it was on the night of the crucifixion, according to his computer. Apparently God don't use a computer. You know, I believe that I'm going to be alive when the Lord comes back, but you know, we have used that as an excuse to do nothing for God. And I'm telling you again, you're not appointed to the rapture. No one is appointed to the rapture. You're appointed to die. We have gotten the rapture so much foremost in our mind that we think we're not going to die, and we've been partying. And you're dying. You know, now I'm telling you, I think I'm not going to die. If you hear that Gip died, I want you to know right now. I just tell you right now, when I died, you can bet I died surprised. But I still died. I saw a movie many years ago. Oh, I think it's 20 years ago, probably 25 years ago. And they had this guy, he was like almost 100 years old, saved fella in a movie, and he said, oh, the Lord showed me that I'm going to live until He comes back. And I saw all kinds of Bible believers saw that film and thought, wow, the rapture might be right around the corner. Whoa, what is this? What is this? I mean, what is that? Is that right off Pentecostalism, charismatics? I mean, come on, man. I don't even know if the guy's dead, but I'll bet. He was old then. I'll bet he's dead. I'll bet he died surprised. Some of you are going to die surprised. I'm telling you, you're going to die surprised.
I don't mean from cancer. I don't mean from a car wreck. I mean from old age.
Well, brother, I don't think we got much time.
Yeah, but you didn't think we had much time 15 years ago. There are people in this room right now, you've been saved over 25 years, and 25 years ago, if somebody would have said, are you going to be here 25 years from now, you'd say, no, we're not going to be here 25 years from now. Hey, you were wrong before. We might be here 25 years from now.
Well, now I'll figure this whole thing out, and there's no way we can.
Yeah, a bunch of dead guys made the same statement. Paul said the Lord is at hand. Didn't he? Thought it was going to be in his lifetime. I even know why he thought that. People, what I'm telling you is this. Let me just say it this way. You know where we might be 15 years from now? Oh, now, preacher, now look, I know I didn't think we'd be here 15 years ago. I didn't think we'd be here today. But we can't possibly be here 15 years from now. Yeah, unless you're wrong again. Isn't that amazing that we can be so wrong, and as soon as we find out we're wrong, we're sure we're right? I had a guy give me this. This is the craziest thing. And this happens all the time. A guy gave me this paper, and he typed it all up, and he said, this is proof conclusive. On the front of it, it says, this is proof conclusive why the Lord is coming on November 29th, 1992. But I noticed that the cover sheet was stapled to another sheet. And I ripped it off, and it said, this is proof conclusive why the Lord's coming November 29th, 1991. That's when he wrote it. When he didn't come in 91, what the guy did? Slapped another cover on it and said, this year we're right. You ready for this? The guy that wrote that is dead. He died. He was so sure he was going to rapture. He's dead. You know why? Because he was appointed to die. He wasn't appointed to live to the rapture. You're going to die. You know where we might be 15 years from now?
15 years from this date, we might be having a meeting at King James Bible Baptist Church in the new sanctuary that you guys built 5 years earlier.
Oh, I don't think that.
You don't think. You quit thinking when you got the TV set. Don't talk to me about it, pal. Look, I'm not going to be argued with by somebody that doesn't use their brain, all right? I mean, at least I use mine, and if you don't use yours, don't argue that I should shut mine down so that I can talk on your level. What I'm telling you tonight is this. You never passed this way before. You've never been here before. You're not eternal soul. You're not eternal spirit. What I'm telling you tonight is that your life is a vapor. It is gone like that, and some of you are going to be so surprised when you wake up old. You're going to be so surprised when you wake up and find gray hair or no hair. You're going to be so surprised when you find out wrinkles. You're going to be so surprised when you get pains that you can't handle anymore, nor understand how they came there or how they got there. You talk to people, you young people, you talk to people that you think are old, and I'm telling you, they're all surprised by how old they are and all the problems they have. And inside here, they still think they're 18. And it's appointed when a man wants to die, and you're dying. Now I'm going to give you my question. I want you to go to Isaiah chapter 10. People, I'm always telling people to read the Bible, read the Bible, read the Bible. You know what will happen if you read the Bible? I don't care how many times you go through it. You know what will happen if you read the Bible every day? Inevitably, you will read it, and you will read a verse today that you're sure God just put in there last night. Because it never stood out the last time you read the Bible, or the last time before that, a time before that. I mean, it's really, I find that embarrassing. I've been through the Bible a few times, and I'll be reading my Bible, and all of a sudden there is a verse there, and I'll say, whoa, how did you slip this in and not mess the page format up? I mean, I'm into page formats. I check that stuff out in lines, and I'm thinking, how did he get this verse in here? Because I've read this book over and over and over and over and over and over, and I never saw that verse. It never reached out and hit me in the eye, and now it just did. Last time through Isaiah, Pat, you know what? I just read this today. Read this verse today. It says this, Isaiah chapter 10, verse 3. And what will you do in the day of visitation? And in the desolation which shall come from far? To whom will you flee for help? And where will you leave your glory? Where are you going to leave your glory? It's Memorial Day. You know what Memorial is? That's what the person left behind.
you're leaving something behind. You know, we're Baptists. Baptist preachers have a thing about cemeteries. We're not macabre. We're not morbid. If you go into a cemetery and if the stone has not been weathered to where you can't read it, boy, you'll get some real testimonies off some of them old graves. When I was in Connecticut, the pastor said, I'm going to take it to a cemetery. I said, you going to bring me back? And he said, I want to show you three graves. Three graves, same cemetery. And so we're driving down a cemetery, you know, and a lot of stones, you know, they're not any bigger than this pulpit, standing about this high, piece of marble, granite. We're driving down this cemetery lot, down this road. Boy, there is a big one. I mean, this is a big, great big thing. I think it's probably from here to that wall at its base. It went up and then up. It looked like, kind of like a miniature Empire State Building, you know, those kind of memorials. And you know when you see that thing, you got to be impressed, especially when it's next to a stone that's this big and flat and this typical gravestone. And he said, that's what I want to show you. And we pulled up, got out of the car, walked over to it. You know who it was? It was the grave of P.T. Barnum. P.T. Barnum, the guy that said there's a sucker born every minute. And you know, he was all flash and all show. And man, even when he went out, you know what he wanted? He wanted some kind of grandeur. I mean, the guy was all production. Even his memorial was a production. We got back in the car, we drove up the lane again. He said, now there's the next one. And he pointed out, and the reason this really stood out, it wasn't as big as Barnum's, but it still was bigger than all the other ones. But the outstanding thing about this one was it had a full-size sculpture of a little baby on top of it. It had a little 2-foot-tall little boy sculpted on top of this grave. And we got out of the car and we walked over to it. And that wasn't a baby at all. As a man. And this was the grave of General Tom Thumb, who worked for P.T. Barnum. And that was a full-size sculpture of him, 22 inches tall. That was his memorial. He says, now I want to show you another one. And we got out of the car, and there was just a line of them, brother. There wasn't anything standing out. And we walked up to this one. We walked up from the back. And the back of this stone, he said, I want you to see the back first. You know what the back said? She had done what she could. Walked around the front. It's Fanny Crosby. Where are you going to leave your glory? I'm from Massillon, Ohio. We got a little town of 33,000 people. Massillon is where pro football got its start. First pro football team in the world was my hometown Massillon Tigers. In fact, they were undefeated for like 6 or 7 years until somebody started the second pro football team. We had a high school coach. Our high school. Listen, our town is 33,000 people. Our high school football stadium seats 26,000 people. We're football. Our high school coach was a guy named Paul Brown. Paul Brown was the coach for our high school. He went up. That's who the Cleveland Browns are named for. He started the Cleveland Browns. Then he left there and started the Cincinnati Bengals. You know a guy like Paul Brown, I worked for a guy in Massillon that knew him. He said he eat, drink, sleep, breathe football. Today, if you go to Massillon, Ohio, you'll go by a huge brick edifice that is called the Paul Brown Tiger Stadium, 26,000 people. And that's where he left his glory. I mean, everything he had was football. You don't think guys like that don't do this? I will tell you what they do. They'll sit bolt upright about 3 o'clock in the morning and they'll say, you know, I think if we fake to this side and we run a guy around the end, I think we could. I will guarantee you those guys have been in the middle of the night with a piece of paper going, this will work. And they did. And that's where they left their glory. Where are you going to leave your glory? You know what your glory is? Your glory is the end product of your life's efforts. Now, guys, you're all going to leave something behind. You understand? You are eating, breathing, and living so that when you die, you're going to leave something behind. Where are you going to leave your glory? I was in North Carolina the day that Dale Earnhardt got killed. I've seen some of those car wrecks, those NASCAR car wrecks, and I mean, you know those guys. I mean, I've seen them tumble end over end. More pieces fell off that car than were on it. I mean, you see fenders and doors and chunks of sheet steel and wheels and hubs and drive shafts. I mean, and you know what happens? Thing comes to rest, and the guy unsnaps his belt, climbs out the window, he's fine. And when I heard that Dale Earnhardt had gotten killed, I thought, my goodness, what happened to that car? I had pictures of this car just tumbling forever. You know what happened? He went across the guy, hit a retaining wall at 180 miles an hour. His neck snapped. That car, they were surprised and they found out he's dead. I'll bet you that Dale Earnhardt would sit around a bunch of guys, all they'd talk about, how can we win a race? What if we lower the front end a quarter of an inch? That'd give us just a little more drag or a little more suction down on the road. You know what? That's where he left his glory. Elvis Presley, the king. That king's dead, pal. I don't know why some of you think so much of him. You live longer than he did. That's right, man. A guy died at 42 years, a dope head. I've heard he was saved, and I'm not going to try to steal his salvation. Maybe he was, and maybe he wasn't. But you know what? That guy had, you know, hit after hit, and people look at him today as a great singer. Maybe he was. That's all he did. That's all he left behind. That's where he left his glory. And I got news for you guys. Some Nashville wax museum or the Cleveland, Ohio Hall of Fame museum for a bunch of rock musicians, if that's all you got when you die, you never lived. Douglas MacArthur. I think Douglas MacArthur was a great military man. He really was. Unlike many of the generals of his day, Douglas MacArthur would calculate the loss of men before he'd go into a battle. When some of those guys use their soldiers as cannon fodder and just run over the body of the guy in front of you and make it to the trench on the other side. Douglas MacArthur fought in World War I. Then he fought in World War II. Then he fought in Korea. And he would sit down. He would think about a battle and how he could have this battle where his men would live. And you know, when the North Koreans crossed the 38th parallel and invaded South Korea, and they took out Seoul and they took out Incheon and they took the entire... the South Korean Peninsula, and they ran our troops down into the Pusan Peninsula. My brother could drive them right in the sea. And they gave that war to MacArthur to win. And MacArthur, I think, might have had a chance at it, but he said, we're going to land at Incheon. We're going to land the Marines at Incheon. I've been to Incheon where they landed. You ever seen those? We've all seen those movies, you know, the Marines landing, and that big landing craft comes up, you know, and the front falls down. These guys jump into the waves, run up the sandy beach. Not at Incheon. They landed in an industrial complex. The reason they're afraid it wouldn't work is because when the tide goes out for 3 miles, you've got 3 miles of mud flats, and if the tide went out and stranded those landing craft, those Marines would all be killed. But they made it into the tide, but when they got there was no beach, there was no dropping the gate. They came up against a 12-foot seawall. They came up, they held their landing craft against it, put up ladders, and had to climb up and bring their head up over top of that seawall, exposed to North Korean fire. And they made it. There's a park there. There's a statue of Douglas MacArthur. I'm sure there's a statue of Douglas MacArthur in the Philippines. In fact, somebody told me there is, right there where he came on, when he said, I will return, and that beach where he walked back up on, there's a statue of him. It's out in the surf of him and those men coming ashore. Douglas MacArthur, I believe, is a good military man. Was he saved? I have no reason to believe he's saved. He had great respect for the Bible, read it every day. That doesn't mean saved. That's where he left his glory. Where are you going to leave your glory? I mean, you're here one time, and you're dying as I speak, and then you're going to go. Now, I know what you think. You see, you think you don't have to worry about leaving anything behind because we're all leaving at the same time. We may not. 1 year from today, if we're here, there'll be somebody in this room who'll be dead. Somebody in this room will have left their glory behind them. I don't care if the rapture happens 2 weeks from 1 year from now. You understand? And there have been people, they have given their life and given their life and given their life to stuff, and it's done absolutely nothing for anybody. And okay, so somebody invented the telephone and somebody invented the electric light and somebody put a car on the road, and that's all good. But where are you going to leave your glory? You know who Bobby Bonner is? Bobby Bonner is a pro baseball player, played for the was it Baltimore Orioles? Is that the team? Is that Baltimore Orioles? Is that a team? He played the minor leagues for a number of years. Same fella. Finally made it into the major leagues. Played for the Baltimore Orioles. I've seen at least two different baseball cards with Bobby Bonner as his career started out. He's good. You know what happened after 2 years? God called him to be a missionary to Botswana, Africa. And he's been there about 20 years. He'll never make it to the Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame. I'll tell you something. If I hear that Bobby Bonner died tomorrow, he left his glory someplace. What I'm asking you is this, people. See, you're so geared that you're never going to die, and I'm telling you, you're going to die. You're going to die. You know what the question is? Where will you leave your glory? If you face your last breath this week, you're going to regret what you did with the time, the limited amount of finite time that you had on this earth. You know what some of you are going to do for the first 1,000 years in heaven? Everybody you walk up, you're going to walk bent over permanently, and everybody you see, you're going to say, please kick me. Because I was so stupid when I was down there. I wasted every second. I wasted all my time. Hey, I like cars. I really do. I could probably tell you the cubic inch of every V8 Chevy ever built, and from the 265 to the 502. I like that. And some of you could tell us about, you mentioned a sports figure, and you'll tell us what his college stats were and what his first year was and his rookie of the year and always been all pro and all of his years. And look, I don't mind if you can do that. You got any scripture in there? You know how to deal with a Mormon or Jehovah's Witness, and if not, why not? What are you doing putting all that garbage? I'm not talking about sin. I'm not talking about filth. I'm talking about wasted space. Come on, guys. How come you understand a computer can't understand your finite brain? You've only got so many bytes in a computer, isn't that right? I don't care how many gigabytes it is. I don't care if it's gotten bigger and bigger, your hard drive. You can still fill it up until it's maxed. And you know what you do when you max it? You realize, I wasted some space here. Well, your brain has got a limited amount of space. You better be careful what you're putting in, wasting space with. You want to quote Shakespeare and can't quote King James? Is that what you want? Because I'm going to tell you something, pal. You're wasting your brain. You want to worry about this and worry about that? What I'm telling you is that you're going to die. You're going to leave this world behind. In the end of your life, you're going to leave your glory. And your glory is going to be the sum total of every breath you took. Your glory is going to be the sum total of everything you did, of every ounce of energy that you expended with your hands, with your feet, with your brain, with your mouth. And I'm asking you tonight, and I want you to think about it. I want you to think about it long and hard. I want you to think about it every time you look in a mirror, when you're at home and you're about to shave your face or brush your teeth or comb your hair, I want you to look in a mirror and I want you to ask your reflection, where are you going to leave your glory? Because you're going to leave it. You hear this? You're leaving here. And there's a good chance that most of us will die before the Lord comes back. I told you I believe we're going to go up in the rapture. I just said there's a good chance we may die before the Lord comes back. When you go, where will you leave your glory? I want you to stand with your heads bowed. I told you four things tonight. You can't do anything about three of them. You can't do anything about the fact that you've never passed this way before. You can't do anything about the fact that your life is but a vapor. You can't do anything about the fact that you're dying. I don't care about your cholesterol level. I don't care if you jog. I don't care if you eat pine cones for good health. I'm telling you, you can't do anything about the fact that you're dying. You can't do anything about the first three. You can do something about the last one. Where will you leave your glory? When you die, what are you going to be known for? There was a baseball player named Billy Sunday. He turned his back on a pro career, didn't he? Now when you say Billy Sunday, nobody thinks baseball player, do they? You know what they think? The man that single-handedly shut down every bar in the United States. Where are you going to leave your glory? You know what's wrong with some of you? You still think you got time to improve your sporting game. You still think you got time to waste and play
If you die tomorrow, God gives you about 5 or 6 minutes to think about it before you go out. You're going to be glad you're dying because you're going to want somebody to kill you for how stupid you've been. I ask you again, where will you leave your glory? You're going to leave it somewhere. Father, we all think we're coming up there. We all think we're going to live until you come down and get us. We all believe that. I believe it, God. I have believed it for 34 years. I never, ever would have believed the day I got saved. Or when I first heard about the rapture, I'd have never believed. But I'd still be walking around here 34 years later. And though I believe I am... to live to the rapture. Now God, these people have died during the time they've been in the service. They died while they're playing softball. They died while they're playing volleyball. They died while they're eating lunch. Closer to a grave than they were when they got out of bed this morning, and they can't do a thing about it. They're going to die while they're sleeping. They're going to die while they're living. The only thing they can do anything about, God, is what they do about their glory. And I sure pray, Father, that everyone here will be wise in where they leave their glory. I hope someone tonight will resolve to expend the limited, finite energy that they have in their life for something that will be eternal, for something they can leave behind that will be glory for you. I hope somebody makes a good decision tonight. They've made enough bad ones. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. With your heads bowed and eyes closed, piano plays. You need to talk to the Lord. That's what you're in church for. Why don't you do it tonight, huh? Where will you leave your glory? Yeah, Clint Eastwood, man. Great movie star. And when he dies, that'll be all he ever did. Who was it? Neil Armstrong, first man to walk on the moon? So that was it, huh? What are you going to do? You know what you can not walk on the moon, but you can do something better. But only if you resolve to leave your glory for Him. If you need to come, you come.
Anybody needs someone to deal with them, personal worker, we'll send them to you if you raise your hand. Seated again.